The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Glenn
Beck. Well, the deplatforming of Alex Jones continues. Now, besides his own website, Twitter was the only other option for Jones to distribute his content. Even though Facebook, YouTube, Apple, Pinterest, Spotify, Stitcher had all near simultaneously kicked him out, Twitter allowed both his InfoWars accounts and his award to stay active. But then Wednesday, boom, boom. Boom, 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 boom. Here comes Twitter. Twitter is the last platform, and Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey is the only advocate you have. I'm just going out on a limb here and say you should probably treat him nicely and with some respect. I'm just saying he's your only friend. So what did Alex Jones do? You know, Alex and his bullhorn. Well, he tracked down the Twitter CEO and screamed at him. You know, I mean, that's what every rational person would do.
Hey, I'm a public figure, too. Hey, Jack, I appreciate you supporting the First Amendment, but I have a right to face my accusers, Jack, and I never threaten the media with battle rifles.
Can I have your autograph, sir?
Hey, Jack.
So Alex Jones, you know, he flies up to see Jack and approach him as all reasonable people would. And that takes about a total of about 40 seconds tops. So Alex has the rest of the day in Washington. What else are you going to do? Well, you have to scream at Oliver Darcy.
You're the definition of a fraud. You are a charlatan that goes around lying about people to destroy the First Amendment.
I haven't lied about anyone, Alex.
Yes, you are a congenital liar. And CNN is a giant fraud and hated the world over.
All right. None of what you're saying is true.
No, yes, it is.
You
are a liar. You think you can gaslight people and call for censorship and then a day later say you aren't?
Oh, boy. Alex Jones is an idiot. And a moron. But he has a right to speak. He is, however, not the only one being untruthful here. Darcy did lead a campaign to pressure tech companies to kick Jones off the platforms. He specifically lobbied both Facebook and Twitter. So Jones does have a legitimate reason to be mad, but he's a moron. And you don't have a right to go and hassle people. By the way, when he first saw him, he's like, oh, there he is, Oliver Darcy. And what a surprise. He spawned from the loins of Glenn Beck. And I wrote to Oliver and I said, I'm sorry, Oliver. I am getting so big and fat now that I apparently can shed an adult male from my loins and not even notice it. Okay, so Jones was now permanently suspended from Twitter. A suspension can, I mean, that's not permanent. You're banned. Yes, you've banned them from Twitter. Both Alex Jones' personal account and the InfoWars account is now gone for good. Now, before anyone cares to celebrate, think about how dangerous of a precedent this is. Social media platforms have banned Alex Jones based off of the mob, a public outcry, a CNN journalist, Jones competition. All of this was brought to a head and he was kicked off. It begins with someone like Alex Jones that's easy to dismiss, but who is next? Because censorship, whether from the government or from a private company, builds like a snowball. Once it gets its first head, it will start rolling and get larger and larger. Meanwhile, Louis Farrakhan and even Hamas, a known stated terrorist organization, still has a Twitter account. In fact, Hamas not only has Twitter, but all social media and all tech companies are subjectively deciding who stays, who gets banned without any consistency at all. If Hamas has a voice in America. How does Alex Jones not have one? I am not a fan of Alex Jones. The guy is an absolute moron. He is also a, I think he is a, he's a poison in our system. But he has a right. And you have a right to not listen to him or to block him or to follow him. All of these platforms claim they're not biased, but when Hamas is still having a voice on your platform and Alex Jones doesn't, I don't get it. And please, Oliver Darcy, I love you. You used to work here. I love you. However, I can't understand the error of your way. I cannot see the blindness that you have here. Because why aren't you hassling Facebook and Twitter over Hamas and over Louis Farrakhan just as much as you were for anyone else? If you're trying to say, well, what are the rules? We want to know the rules. Why are you only using one? Why? Pandora's box has been opened. The precedent has been set. Who will be the next small-time media outlet or personality to be deplatformed? Everyone, every voice on all sides should begin to look over their shoulder.
It's Friday, September 7th.
I am Spartacus.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Hi-ho, I am Kermit the Frog.
I am Spartacus. Did you see that dramatic moment?
Oh,
Cory Booker yesterday.
He's my hero.
Oh my gosh, he was amazing. He was amazing. So he was in the Senate yesterday, and this is definitely not grandstanding or you know, just trying to bring the spotlight to yourself. He made such a sacrifice. He willingly said, "No, no, no, Father, do not burn that son. I will go and be the sacrificial lamb for your God." So he ties himself up and he throws himself on a bundle of sticks. And he's like, go ahead, set me on fire. And then everybody looks at him and is like, we don't want to set you on fire. Why would we set you on fire? Nobody was going to set anybody on fire. What are you doing, Corey? No, I'm the sacrificial lamb. Here's the moment yesterday that is quite possibly one of the most embarrassing cries for attention. And remember, you're in competition now with Alex Jones. Most embarrassing cry for, please somebody pay attention to me, that I have ever seen.
And I understand that the penalty comes with potential ousting from the Senate. And if Senator Cornyn believes that I violated Senate rules, I openly invite and accept the consequences of my team releasing that email right now. And I'm releasing it to expose that, number one, the emails that are being withheld from the public have nothing to do with national security. Now, I appreciate the comments of my colleagues. This is about the closest I'll probably ever have in my life to an I am Spartacus moment. My colleagues,
serious,
numerous of them,
yeah,
said that they too accept the responsibility.
Okay,
he's dead serious when
right.
he says that.
So what is the I am Spartacus moment? Okay, let's just define this first. In the movie Spartacus, Kurt Russell plays Spartacus, and at one point he is a slave, and he is with all these other slaves that have been rounded up. They're all chained together. They're sitting in a valley. And the Romans want to know, we have no problem with the rest of you. We'll let all of you go. Otherwise, we're going to kill all of you. We're going to slaughter every single one of you unless you tell us which one of you is Spartacus. And he realizes that, oh my gosh, everyone's going to be killed because they're looking for me. And I can't let that happen. And so I will stand up to the power and I will stand up and say, I am Spartacus. But as he stands up, two others stand up with him. And before he can say, I am Spartacus, somebody else says, I am Spartacus. And then somebody else says, I am Spartacus. And before you know it, everybody in the valley is standing up saying, I am Spartacus. This is much better for the monologue I just did. If I would have finished that monologue and said, and by the way, first they come for Alex Jones, and I don't like Alex Jones, but if you're going to come for somebody, then I am Alex Jones. Okay, that's an I am Spartacus moment. Not, you know what? I got some documents that have nothing to do with national security, and in fact, nothing to do even with the judge that we're talking about. I'm going to pretend that these are really, really super sensitive, and I'm going to break all the rules. When actually, all the documents that you're showing here, they've already been approved. It's okay. Everything's good. And so you're standing up and going, you know what I'm going to do? I am such a rebel. I am going to get up at 7:30. I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to come home. I'm going to take a shower. And then I'm going to get into my car. And I'm going to be in my office by 9 a.m. I don't care what anybody says. I am Bill. It's ridiculous.
It's amazing, too. I mean, first of all, we shouldn't dismiss the way he actually put it, which is, this is as close as I'll come to an I am Spartacus moment, which for me, it's probably true for Cory Booker.
Yeah.
The exact opposite of an I am Spartacus moment right. is as close as he will come.
Right.
But what's interesting about the I am Spartacus moment is that it at its core is a moment of anonymity. It's about hiding the identity of someone doing something principled or whatever, right?
Well, at its core, I'm willing to sacrifice for, I'm willing to tell the truth of who I am, which Cory Booker didn't do yesterday, of who I really am to save everyone else. But the moment,
right?
It was not about him. It was about everybody else standing up going, no, sit down.
Yeah, everyone else joining together for a principled cause to hide the identity of the person who was leading it, right? All this moment was about was, please, everyone in America, look at me. Look at what I'm doing. I'm saying this over and over again. Chuck Grassley, in the middle of this thing, is going, can you please just stop repeating yourself? Yeah, but I'm putting myself on the line. I'm breaking the rules right now. I know, but you said that 5,000 times. Can you say something else?
This no, I've got about, lots of campaign commercials to make.
Exactly. It's all about trying to get eyeballs on Cory Booker so you notice he's different than Kamala Harris or whatever, Joe Biden, whoever else runs in 2020. So instead of, you know, it's an act of taking on something that, you know, it's about hiding someone else's identity who is principled. Like if someone else stood up and said, I released those documents. Not Cory Booker, I released them. And then another person stood up and said, I released those documents. Of course, other people were saying I released those documents. The problem was they worked for the Bush administration.
It's as if the Romans said, yeah, we're not really looking for Spartacus.
We're not interested. Why do you keep saying this?
I'm Spartacus. I got it. What's the point here? Well, I'm an outlaw. Important story in history, you know, the story of Jebediah and Cletus. They had their last meal together. It was a Friday night, and they got together Friday early in the morning, and Cletus just pushed his chair away from the table and he said, Jebediah, one of you are going to betray me. And Jebediah said, what are you talking about, Cletus? And Cletus said, why are you going to betray me? In fact, you know what? I'm not even going to let that happen. I am just going right now to the church and to the government, and I'm just going to turn myself in right now. And Cletus did, and he stood there in front of the police station and the church, and he said, I am Cletus, and I will tell you right now, you can go ahead and drive those nails through my hands. And the priest opened up the window, and he's like, Cletus, what the hell are you talking about? It's 2 a.m. What are you doing? I am Cletus, and I know you're after me for what I say. And then the police come out, and they're like, Cletus, no, we're not after you. You're fine. In fact, you showed up in your police officer uniform. You work for us. We're not coming. Well, you can do whatever you want or say whatever you want, but I am Cletus.
Bizarre.
It's so stupid. Oh, it's officially a circus. I would like to pass a law that every senator and every congressman and every person in the media need to start driving clown cars.
It would make more sense.
Yeah,
would it? Because, I mean, the circus of this, we are in, what you're watching, is the 2020 election. You were here already. Forget 2018. This is all 2020 election.
Would it be so much better if Kavanaugh is sitting at the table and this little car drives up, beep, beep, and then all of the senators get out of the car. And you're like, how do they get all the senators in that car?
By the way, Kirk Douglas, not Kurt Russell.
Oh, yeah, Kirk Douglas.
Yes, everyone's yelling at you about that. Yes.
I am Kurt Russell. All right, different movie. let me tell you about Casper. Casper Mattress is just a great, great mattress. If you are looking for a new mattress, they're hard. It's hard to find one. And you go into the stores and, you know, you lay down on a bed and you feel stupid. And the guy is standing there like, well, have you tried this one? And I'm like, nah. I'm fully clothed. I'm going to lay on it. They're all starting to feel exactly the same. I lay on one. It's really, really super soft. And I'm like, oh, this is really comfy. But if you slept on that thing, your back would be killing you. How many times have you gone to a mattress store and felt that way? And then bought a mattress and you're like, okay, I hate this damn thing. The best way to buy a mattress is to actually sleep on it for a couple of weeks. Casper's going to give you 100 nights. And if you don't love it, they come and pick it up. It's really, really super easy. You'll sleep cool. You'll sleep comfortable every single night. Go to Casper.com. Use the promo code Glenn right now. If you go there now, you're going to save, what is it, $50 towards the purchase of your select mattresses at Casper.com/Glenn, promo code Glenn. That's with two N's. Don't forget the second N. Sometimes they'll say, leave the second N off for no reason, but don't. You've got to have both. GLENN, promo code Glenn, Casper.com/Glenn.
Did you see the news reporting last night? Stu, have you seen this? Donald Trump spoke for 2 hours and he couldn't say the word anonymous. That was big news. Big news.
Wow.
We should do an in-depth study on other words he couldn't say in a speech.
It
affected me deeply.
I'm glued to the screen.
Yeah,
right
I know, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the same time they're doing this, they're wondering why they're irrelevant, and they completely miss the fact that Joe Rogan is now the king of media. I think it's official. And I hate to use the word media because I don't think it's exactly right for him, because it's not media. It's just like a place where people who are hanging out who just want to know about something that actually maybe is interesting, informative, or actually affects their life. That's where they go to listen and hear. Joe Rogan, remember, this is the guy who originally was having you eat spiders on Fear Factor. Okay. Hey, can you put that spider in your mouth? This guy is now the one who had Elon Musk on yesterday for 2 hours and 45 minutes. And Elon Musk, it's an amazing interview. Amazing interview. There's so much to mine in the 2 hours and 45 minutes. It's mind-boggling. Okay? He was smoking pot. Wow.
Potentially now, questionable tactics for a CEO in crisis.
I would think that doesn't make you look the most stable, but I don't think that's what Elon Musk is going for.
He doesn't care.
Yeah, he's a billionaire, and he's living a billionaire's life, I think, the way billionaires should. I don't care. I'm doing this. You can do that, whatever, but I don't care.
Yeah, I've got a crazy idea. I've got a lot of money, and I can try it, so I'm doing it.
Right. So the media, while the media is talking about absolute, it's a game. There's a ton of people out there that aren't playing a game. They don't care about all of that stuff. They just don't care. And it used to be, I used to look at Joe Rogan and say, look how far ahead he is. And now I look at Joe Rogan and I say, look how clueless the media is. Look how close to death they really are.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Let's go back to some Glenn Beck Program first principles. Spit yourself out of the system. What does that mean? Spit yourself out of the system. It means don't be a part of this. Don't be a part of this. One of the other first principles of the program has been there's going to come a time when everybody's going to be angry and everybody's going to say, you got to come over here. We got to get these guys. And you have to calmly stand there and say, no, I am not going with you. No, come this way. This way. For a long, long time, I have not been able to give you an answer other than anything based on my gut. And my gut was both right and wrong. It was right, but I didn't know why. Because my gut has been saying, there's going to come a time when we're going to be pulled apart. We got to lock arms now. We have to love one another. We have to love our enemies. We have to read Gandhi. We have to read Martin Luther King. We have to read Jesus, because that's the answer. And nobody wants to hear that because they think that that is capitulating. And I guess in some ways I can really understand that. In many ways I can understand that. And I can understand how that message might have sounded. But I have now spent about 4 years where 4 years ago I was out. I was like, I can't do it anymore. I don't. I would say all the time off the air, I don't have a single answer. I there's no reason for me to even exist and do this job. Why am I doing this job? I don't have any answers. Then 2 years ago, I started noticing some things and not feeling comfortable trying doing the same thing that I did when we found modern progressives. And once you understood the early 20th century modern progressive, once you understood Woodrow Wilson, and everybody was like, oh, shut up about Woodrow Wilson. Once you understood that, once you understood the cabal that he put around himself, once you understood the way that modern advertising was developed for propaganda. Once you understood that, and you understood the eugenics movement here in America that leapt over the water back into Germany and planted the seeds of the Holocaust, all of a sudden you could go, okay, there's a difference between a liberal and a progressive. And most progressives don't have any idea what they're talking about. They have no understanding of what that movement really is. Then I kind of gave up. Then I started hearing 180 some genders. Then I started hearing the hypocrisy beyond hypocrisy. I mean, beyond the just usual hypocrisy. People could march in the street against fascism, and they themselves were advocating for fascist outcomes to silence speech. How the hell does that work? This is when I came very late to the table and really started doing my homework on postmodernism. Postmodernism, if you understand this, you will understand how to fight. And it's not typical. Postmodernism is the idea that I can destroy the modern world, and I have to destroy the modern world and anything that props it up. And what I mean by the modern world, and this is really important, is the Age of Enlightenment. Now, remember, the Age of Enlightenment is called Enlightenment because it came and brought us out of the Dark Ages, where nothing had meaning except for what the people up at the top said had meaning. Well, early on in Germany, they had a real problem with Enlightenment principles because it brought you you are in charge of your own life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, that is not acceptable. So the postmodernists got together and decided we have to destroy the patriarchy. We have to destroy anything, that revolves around reason that holds this system up. And we can use any tool, any device. Well, what they're trying to create is hatred, animosity, and chaos. It's working pretty well, isn't it? Because we don't realize what their real goal is, and that these are all just tactics made to make you enraged, made to get you to respond in an angry way instead of laughing them off and saying, "Oh, you cute little postmodernist. Oh, how cute that is." Now, let me explain why postmodernism doesn't work. That's what you have to do. If you want to win, because right now there are people who do not agree with you on who to vote for. But they are looking at people like Keith Ellison, or look at Linda Sarsour. And they're Democrats, and they've always voted for the Democratic Party. And they're like, wait, it's Linda Sarsour. I don't think she's an actual feminist, at least the way I see it. The woman's wearing a hijab. No, she wants Sharia law. I don't think so. There are Democrats that feel that way. But because we have... called people who want a bigger welfare state socialists and communists, those people who just believe in a bigger helping hand from the government, say, I'm not a socialist. I don't want to get rid of capitalism. And their defenses go up, and we push them into the arms of people who do want to destroy those things. Gotta stop. Look how many people have been pushed to excuse people like Steve Bannon or Milo Yiannopoulos, whatever his name is. How many people excuse those things that wouldn't have? How many of us are excusing things in Washington right now that 20 years ago, there's no way in hell we would have ever even accepted or tolerated? We're now raising the flag and going, yeah, but your side, that's the problem. Yeah, but your side. Because the extremes have pushed us against each other. So it's amazing what's happening. There is a way out, but you have to understand it. And you have to be a leader. I am calling on you now to be a leader. I am calling on you now to say, this is the time. If you've been listening to me for a long time and I said, there's going to come a time, it's right now. Because this is only going to get worse. And you have to educate yourself. You have to know what's going on. You have to be able to spot this. And you have to be able to defuse it. Do I cut the red wire or the white wire? That's who you are. My journey on this has been almost a straight up incline. And I wrote the book Addicted to Outrage. And I started it before I thought I knew. I didn't. And I wrote it a second time. And I'd like to write it again because it's such a steep incline. But I want you to get the very basic idea of that we are addicted now. There is science that shows you are addicted to Twitter, to Facebook, to your phone, to social media, and more importantly, to outrage. It feels good. That's not a psychological thing. That is a chemical thing. We've had guests on from social media that have left social media who helped design it, who are now saying, we designed this to be addictive. And we all are addicted. We're addicted to the social media and we're addicted to outrage. You must break the addiction to outrage. You have to. Because when you're outraged, when you're angry, you stop thinking. You are in fight or flight. How many times do you lose your temper, you get upset, and then you have to go back and apologize, say, I'm sorry, I just flew off the handle. That's normal. Because when you feel your back is up against the wall, your animal instinct, which is to preserve humanity, it was put there for a reason, it's a good response. When you're put up against the wall, your instinct is to fight back or to flee. Fleeing doesn't help. Fighting back is what they want. You have to know how their perverted anti-logic works. And that's what the book will give you, Addicted to Outrage. I urge you to order it. Order it for a friend. Today is the first day that the tickets are on for sale for the general public?
For the tour, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm also going on tour. Some of the tickets come with a signed book and everything else. But, you know, even if you can't afford that, I think the tickets are like $30 or $37, something like that. Please come and come with a friend. Come with a friend who is like, I don't know. I don't like him. I don't know. I'm telling you, you will learn more from this book. And in the stage tour, we'll have a lot of fun as well. We have to come together on the understanding of what's really going on. And it has nothing to do with the daily squabbles about Kavanaugh. Has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with literally the destruction of the Western world and literally the destruction of reason. That's one side. Your side cannot be the Democrats or the Republicans, because that's not what the battle is here. Your side is reason, enlightenment, open and honest conversation, the Bill of Rights. I have a right to be heard. I have a right to gather with whom I want. And because I have that right, I have to protect your right. It's why we're standing up for Alex Jones. This is the beginning of that fascistic silencing of voices, which is critical. And if you understand what was set out of frustration in the 1950s, where the communists were like, these Americans, they are never going to do it. They're never going to have revolution. That's when a group of people got together and said, oh, we can cause them to have a revolution. We're going to pit them against each other. We're going to make everyone their own unique little class. And we're going to show them how they've been held down by the white male and the Western hierarchy. Because then they'll rise up and they'll destroy it all. That's the real goal. Find out all about it. Order your book right now. It's Addicted to Outrage. Addicted to Outrage. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and everything else. All right. I want to talk to you about FilterBuy. I was up at the ranch up north. Last week? Was last week my vacation? Yeah. I'm up in the mountains. And there's a mountain. Have you ever been to the ranch, Stu?
I have not.
That's right.
I've been invited or anything yet.
Yeah, that's right. I've got a mountain that is about 10,000 feet. Well, I don't know. Probably the foot of it is about a mile away from my front door. Okay. I could not see that mountain because of the smoke from the forest fires.
Wow.
Not from California, but from Canada. It was bizarre. And it was so smoky. We are breathing in crap right now that we're not supposed to be breathing in. And you would not believe how much crap is in the air. I mean, it's normal crap. But now because of the forest fires all over the country, you're breathing in stuff you shouldn't. And your air filter is probably black. FilterBy. Go to FilterBy.com. They're America's leading provider of HVAC filters for homes and businesses. They have, you know, 600 different sizes. And if you're, you know, a company and you've got some monstrosity like I do in the back of the studios here, you're probably going to need to have it custom made. They're all made right here in America. And you can save 5% right now if you order and have auto replacement. So in other words, it'll just show up at your door. And that's the best thing for me, because then I look at it and I'm like, oh, crap. Yeah, where was the HVAC system again? I'll change my filter. Otherwise, I'm going to change my filter when I move, because I'm just that kind of guy. Yeah, Tanya's a lucky woman. FilterBy.com. Go to FilterBy.com. Change your filters now. FilterBy.com.
Glenn Beck.
Well, the good thing is Twitter has gotten rid of Alex Jones, so we've silenced a voice. Yet Twitter is okay with Hamas having a voice here in America, which is kind of weird. Don't you think, Stu? Kind of weird.
Yeah, there's an interesting list of accounts. Yeah. You know, I mean, Hamas has one. Louis Farrakhan has one.
Yeah.
Well, he's the not. Muslim Brotherhood. David Duke.
David Duke has one.
Yeah. Antifa.
Mm-hmm.
Mahmoud Ahmadinejad from Iran.
Right.
Bill Ayers.
Right.
Mahmoud Abbas, Nation of Islam.
Uh-huh. But it's no big deal. It's no big deal. We got Alex Jones. Okay. All right. So I don't understand the standards. And maybe we can all unite on this standard. Voices should not be silenced. More voices, not fewer voices. Maybe that's just me. Bill O'Reilly with his recap of the week. This one should be interesting when we come back.
Glenn Beck.
I want to start this hour with a personal note. For the very first time in, I don't know how long, my hands are even a little shaky, and I am nervous to share with you something from my private life. And I am going to this weekend in a special podcast. And then we're going to talk about it on Monday. And I'm nervous about talking to you about it, because it is so personal, and it involves my family, and I, Tanya and I have talked about it, and we feel that this happened to us for a reason, and we should share it, but I am so uncomfortable sharing it. Look for a special podcast. If you subscribe to my podcast now, you will get it. It's either Saturday or Sunday. I'm not sure. It was something that came out in the recording of a podcast that I have been praying on this for a while. And it just felt like it was time to say it. But I didn't go into great detail on it, but we will to some degree on Monday. The parts that you need to know we'll go into on Monday. So if you are not a subscriber to the podcast, go to, I don't know, iTunes or wherever you subscribe and get the podcast. That'll be coming out this weekend. And as I said, we will talk about it openly and as clear as I can be on Monday. All right, let's begin the hour, please.
We didn't talk about this in advance, and I didn't plan on this in advance, but prayed before we went on. So I feel compelled to share something that you know about that nobody else knows about. I've not talked about this with anybody. You say you feel guilty. You know, why are my kids? I felt my kids were safe.
Music. We're going to play some Bill O'Reilly. How about having Bill on? A little technical difficulties there.
Sorry about that. Let's go to Bill O'Reilly on the Glenn Beck program. Hello, Bill.
Beck, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm all right.
Okay. Bill, it has been an interesting week. I don't even know where we should begin. I guess either we could either start with Woodward or Kavanaugh. Which do you prefer?
I think Kavanaugh is the more important story for your listeners. So why don't we start with him?
Okay, let's go. Kavanaugh is, in my opinion, a guy who, I mean, he's teaching at a Jesuit school. So I'm not sure, you know, the Jesuits are letting somebody in that I'm always comfortable with to teach students. So I'm not sure that you're going to get a better pick more right down the center of America than Kavanaugh. And the left is acting as if, you know, you're putting, you know, an Moses up there who is going to say, no, it's only these 10 laws. What's happening?
Well, I think this is instructive in two ways. Number one, that most Americans don't follow the Supreme Court. They don't watch the hearings. They don't know who Kavanaugh is. They don't know why he's important. This is most of the folks. Now, the news people listen to this radio program, come to my website, BillO'Reilly.com, they know. And they know that for the past 20 years that the culture has changed dramatically. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay. So why has the culture changed dramatically? Why now can't we speak about things and not being... without being accused of being a racist or a homophobe or, you know, all of that. So the PC culture has enveloped every American. You say one word out of line, you can lose your job, you can be attacked, anything can happen. And that didn't used to be the case. You can't tell a joke, you can't disagree with anything. If somebody wants you to bake a cake and you don't really like what the cake is going to be used for, you have to bake the cake or go to the Supreme Court and spend $1 million. So this is what it is. And this is why people need to pay attention, because all of this happened through the courts, not in Congress. All of this change in the culture was imposed on the American citizen by judges, many of whom are activist liberal judges. Because the conservative movement, all they want to do is keep the status quo. They're not looking to impose anything. So in gay marriage, they just said, well, we really don't like gay marriage because we feel that marriage is a sacrament and should be only between man and woman. We want to keep it that way. No, you can't do that. So now, with Trump putting forth two moderate traditional judges, they're not conservative bomb throwers. They're moderate traditional judges. This trend is likely to stop. This PC imposition on every American is likely to stop. That's why you're seeing these people in the chamber screaming, screeching, and you're seeing the far left Democrats on the Judiciary Committee doing everything they can to stop it, because they know that the PC culture, the progressive culture, is not going to be able to progress through Congress. It never has. It's now going to stall, and that's what this is all about.
Okay, may I present a different take, slightly different take, and get your thoughts on it.
I think there are things that are happening right now, and you have to divide them really kind of into four groups. You have the real, true postmodernist Marxist groups, the head of the snake here, the Linda Sarsours, that are out of step with almost everyone except those postmodernist markets that want Marxists that want to destroy reason, destroy the West, divide and conquer. Those people are very clear, and they, I would agree, want to stop anyone. Kavanaugh, doesn't matter who it is, unless you're a postmodernist Marxist, they're going to scream and yell. But part of their reason for doing that is they need the chaos and the anger. Well, that's when you get in the next group. The next group are the politicians that are using those people. They think they're using them, but it's the opposite way around. They've been using those people for fuel to get people to rally around the Democrats or a politician. And so they're using the legitimate postmodern anger, and they are using that to try to get elected. The media is just doing it because they're with one of those groups, and they get ratings out of it, which leaves the average Democrat. Do you believe that there is a growing number of average Democrats that are not into 183 genders? They're not into, there is no truth. They're not into any of this. And they're not the kind that, you know, like to sit in a room and be told, sit down, shut up, you're going to listen to us for a while. Those people are starting to peel away, or will start to peel away. Agree or disagree?
I don't know what the numbers are about those people. I think younger American Democrats are happy with the radicalization of the party. They have been raised in a sense of entitlement. They want the government to give them things. I'm generalizing, of course. But 45 and down, I think they're happy that we have Elizabeth Warren saying, hey, I'm going to pay for everything in your life.
Correct.
The older Democrats, I think, may be fed up with it, but their problem is that the Republican Party has been demonized to the extent that they say, well, where am I going to go?
Correct.
You know, correct. Do I go to Trump? He's the devil. So I'm not sure the numbers there are going to be significant.
Okay, let's go to Bob Woodward's book.
Yeah,
Bob Woodward. Do you think he's a credible source?
I do. I've known him a long time. I've had him on my programs dozens of times. His reporting of Watergate was honest. But I wrote a column about how he did this. I don't know how much time we have before Stu has to go to the men's room.
I've got about two minutes here.
Okay.
Had a big water this morning.
Let me give you the outline of it. You walk into a publisher's office, and you know this better than anyone because you're an author. You say, I want to write a book on this. Give me $5 million. In Woodward's case, it's $10 million. The publisher says yes or no. Got to be a sharply focused book. This is what I want to do. So Woodward says, I'm going to do a book on Trump and the chaos within the Trump administration. Simon & Schuster hands him the check. Then he goes out. Now, he can't come back 6 months later and go, you know what? I didn't find that. I found that there's a lot of good things going on in the Trump administration. That's, he can't do it. All right? He's got to stick to his original plan. So he casts a wide net in Washington, and he knows everybody. Who doesn't like Trump? Who's disenchanted inside the administration? And the names come back. And he starts to call them. And every single one of them say, well, you can't use my name. This is deep background, Beck. Deep background. No name. So then he writes down what they say or records what they say. And then he says, Woodward says, how can I verify this? And they say, well, call my cousin Lenny. I told him exactly the same thing on the day it happened. Here's Lenny's number. And then he calls Lenny, and Lenny goes, oh, yeah, yeah, I remember something like that. Verification. And then they put it in the
book. Well, what is the difference between these, you know, unnamed sources, I mean, and and Deep Throat?
Specificity. Because you were basically, what Woodward and Bernstein were reporting on in Watergate were very specific allegations that Nixon was ordering payments to people, paying people to shut up
But this is
not an illegal action.
But so you know, and I know you know this, this book is not about an investigation on Russia. No. It's about how is this administration operating, or at least at the time.
That's right. And and that's, I'm glad you brought that up, Beck, because when we come back from break, I will tell you why Trump is handling this all wrong. All wrong. And how this book could help him if he could figure it out, which he never will because he don't listen to anybody.
Which is in the book. Okay, we'll be back with Bill O'Reilly in just a second. Want to share some feedback that we've gotten from our partners at Palm Beach Letter, the Tika Tiwari's crypto course. 97% of the listeners have given his crypto course a 4 or 5 star rating. People, Richard wrote in, very simple course. It's, he's really good as a presenter. Another person, I knew very little from various sources, but the how-to pieces were all missing. I now have a better grasp on what cryptocurrency is and how to buy it if I want to. That's from Barry. I was less than a novice when I started this course. The lessons were clear and concise, although still apprehensive. I believe the course has given me the confidence to actually invest in cryptocurrency, or at least know how to do it. That's from Marilyn. Lots of people are taking this crypto course. We asked Tika to put this together and to give you the basic understanding of what cryptocurrency is, what the blockchain is, why it is game changing, and why I believe everybody should have, you know, at least $100 in it. You should never put a lot of money into this because it could all go to hell, but it also could be game changing. $100 in cryptocurrency. SmartCryptoCourse.com. Take it now. SmartCryptoCourse.com, or you can call 877-PBL-BACK. 877-PBL-BACK. Welcome to the program. Bill O'Reilly is here now to tell us how Donald Trump should handle the Woodward book.
Yeah, I mean, I just can't understand why. Because, as you know, I've known Trump for so long, why he just cannot step back for a second and see that he has helped Woodward, that he helps people that he attacks in tweets. Okay? First of all, who cares about the Woodward book, Beck? Who? Do you care about it?
No.
All right. Stu, of course, doesn't care about it. I don't care about it.
Well, now, wait, hang on just a second. Let's go a little deeper on that. The reason why is because there's nothing new here. I got
That's right.
There's nothing new.
What am I going to learn from 423 pages of Trump bashing?
Right.
Nothing. And I was just going to say that, so thank you for speeding me up.
Yeah.
All right. So Trump supporters, they don't care about the book. There's not one of them going to buy it. It's like Amorosa's book, right? The people who hate Trump, they already know that they hate him. So a few people in D.C. will buy the book. It'll get some publicity. It's like the
FBI guy's book.
But
it's going to be a big book. It won't be.
I don't think it's going to sell that well in the long run. I don't think it's going to have legs. I really don't.
Yeah,
there's too many of them.
It may not. It may not have the legs that a book like this would have had in the past.
You know, 5 years ago, because there's too many of them.
Yeah.
You know, how many times are going to have to read the same thing?
Yeah, it's not.
So, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm usually not, as you know. Okay, so nobody cares really about this book in the sense that it matters to anybody's life. Mm-hmm. So Trump, that's number one. Okay, do we have it, Mr. President? No one cares. Okay, number two, after all these interviews and all of these people trashing Trump from within his own organization, none of them tell Woodward, hey, Trump admitted that he and Vlad Putin were vacationing in the Maldives talking about the campaign. I heard him say that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Not one. Not one mention of any collusion with the Russians or anything. Now, if I'm Trump, that's what I latch on to. All right? So here's the best reporter, investigative reporter. The establishment says he's the best in the world. He comes out with a 400-page book. There's not, no mention of this. Okay? That's the headline. But no, no. Trump's got to go, this is all made up. It isn't made up. Woodward's not going to do that. He's not going to make it up. He's got tape recordings and talking to people, and they're saying whatever they say. I mean, that guy's not stupid. So anyway, there you go, Beck. And I don't understand why the White House isn't smarter at this point in history.
Bill, I mean, you know, this is a great example of it, I think, today, in that, you know, you have all of these stories and all the controversy and all the back and forth. And by the way, the unemployment rate came out today. It's 3.9%. Like, and it gets, does that get any traction at all? Do the American people even know that? I mean,
well, the stock market didn't. It went down. I mean, so I think that's built in again, that the economy is good. Trump will campaign on that, of course. I think he did a 7-hour speech last night in Montana. I think he's still speaking, by the way, about, you know, how good the economy is.
Right.
I heard, though, that he's going to start demanding everybody comb their hair the way he does. That's next.
I don't think that's possible.
I don't think that's a
you know who the You know what's amazing, Bill, is the guy who cuts his hair. You know, everybody wants to know, I mean, how does that work, et cetera, et cetera. That guy is a complete unknown. I think he made Donald Trump sign a non-disclosure saying you can never tell anyone I'm the guy who cuts your hair.
He doesn't want to be tied in. Well, he had a haircut last night. That's why I bring it up. You know, it's funny that Fox News carries the whole speech.
Yeah.
And they basically say, look, this is great because
quickly,
none of you people have to come to work today. But they lose sponsor time because they don't cut the break.
Mm-hmm. Back in a minute.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Let's go to Bill O'Reilly. We've just talked about Bob Woodward's book coming out and the things that are in the book. It's a time capsule of the way his office was running at the beginning, and I don't think anybody was surprised by it. And I didn't think there was anything new in it. If you take out all the he said, she said stuff, which you're never going to be able to verify unless he releases the tapes, you know, there was nothing new in there at all about Donald Trump, even. I mean, that's the guy we elected. I got it. But there was another thing that happened the very next day, and that was the New York Times op-ed of some anonymous high-ranking senior official that is pretty much admitted to a secret combination or a cabal that tried to talk about invoking the 25th Amendment, which means, you know, he's incapacitated or too crazy for office. They didn't, quote, want to cause a constitutional crisis. So instead, they're working behind the scenes to thwart what he wants to do.
Yeah.
Bill, is there any way that this is constitutional or legal or good that you can see?
Yeah, it's legal because even though you work for a president, you have freedom of speech.
No. I mean, this is not a constitutional rule of law. If you're working for him, to be able to go into his office and say, Mr. President, no, this is why it's wrong. That's one thing. But to covertly subvert the president, walk out of his office and go, OK, guys, we're not going to do any of that. That's not constitutional.
No, it's a personnel matter. I don't think you're going to get anywhere on a constitutional level of this. But let me put some perspective into it, because I know you enjoy that. They did the same thing to Abraham Lincoln, the team of rivals. I mean, they tried everything to blunt Lincoln's opinion about how to wage the war, the Civil War. The same exact thing happened. John Adams, his crew, the people working for him, they almost hung him in the Alien and Sedition Acts and all of that. This isn't anything new. Every president's got dissenters and people who try to sabotage from within. Every single president. Ronald Reagan, in the 25th Amendment thing, they actually discussed it if you read Killing Reagan. We laid it right out for you. after he was shot. He was foggy some days, and his staff, they didn't know whether he was going to be able to carry on. So all it is hyperbole, and it doesn't concern me. The New York Times obviously is out to get Trump removed from office. They'll do anything. When this is all masked, it'll probably be Tom Arnold who wrote the op-ed.
Any doubt that that name will come out?
Yes, I think somebody will squeal on him. But, once it comes out, then if it's Anderson Cooper, it'll be a big scandal.
Let me ask you this.
Yes.
We talked to somebody yesterday. He's a journalist. I don't even remember his name. What was his name, Stu? Remember? Matt something. Matt LaPlante. That was it. And you apparently hate him. And so that was one of the reasons why we talked to him.
I didn't even know him.
Yeah, apparently you said that he was, I don't know.
He wasn't a journalist. At one point, apparently, you invited him on the show and he wouldn't come on.
Who does he work for?
Salt Lake Tribune
and a few other papers.
All right, so he's some local clown who said something ridiculous.
Website describes him, a local clown. Yes. You're a beautiful man. You didn't like him, but that's one of the reasons why we called him right away. After the show, we got this tweet yesterday that he said, I've put all the phrases and everything into Google and I'm matching phrases that have been used by people. I've been taking the phrases and then putting names next to them, see if anything pops up. He said, relentlessly, two names keep popping up, and only two names. Ian Bremmer, who is a guy who's a writer and has written a few op-eds for the New York Times, and John Huntsman Jr.
And they both work for Trump?
John Huntsman works for Trump. He's the ambassador to Russia.
Gotcha. I don't think that's possible.
You don't.
The other guy, is he a speechwriter?
No. So the other guy's just a writer, and he's on TV here and there.
But they were neighbors in Washington. They're good friends with each other.
So the accusation or the inclination, I don't know what you want to say. He wasn't actually accusing it, but his theory basically said that Bremmer co-wrote it with Huntsman, and Bremmer and Huntsman have co-written an op-ed for the New York Times previously.
And Huntsman is the guy who did the no labels thing. And, it does
read for the Obama administration as well.
Yeah, it does read like Huntsman. But, there's no evidence of that other than this one guy.
Yeah, well, I have one word, phooey. you haven't heard that one in a while.
Is that the word of the day today?
Phooey. Mm. Yeah, I don't care. I don't speculate. It's boring. I got something on Nike. Do you care?
Yeah.
Okay. Today, writing in the New York Post, Phil Mushnick. I love that last name, Mushnick. Points out that Nike has been credibly accused of paying overseas workers nothing to make its very expensive Air Jordan sneakers. In fact, for years, Nike's been criticized for exploiting foreign labor. So I'm paging Colin Kaepernick in my tweet. Hey, Colin, how about that social justice, huh? Dreaming? I think they're dreaming over there in China, making the Nikes for no money. Isn't that nice? What do you think?
Well, I have something for you. Tell me what you think of this.
All right.
The stock of Tesla taking a dive today.
Yeah, it's a good car. A friend of mine has it.
It's a great car.
And I like it.
Yeah.
But Elon Musk, that's his name, right? Elon Musk?
Yeah, that's his name, yes.
Okay. I don't follow this stuff, Beck. I mean, I got a car that's 4 years old. It gets me where I want to go.
Well, he's more than just a car guy. I mean, he's more than just Tucker.
Anyway, I went to a party one time, and I don't go to parties much, but I was paid a lot of money to do it. And Elon Musk was there, and he was sitting there, and he didn't introduce him, but somebody introduced me to him. He said, how you doing? Well, nah. The guy didn't say one word at the party for like 3 hours to anybody. So that's my Elon Musk story. He looks like a guy.
Work on that story and bring it back. Work on that.
Frazzled?
What'd you say? He's a little frazzled. Well,
it looks like it.
His stock is going down today, and there's two reasons I want to bring this up. His stock is going down today because he was on the Joe Rogan show, and he smoked pot on the Joe Rogan show, which
legal pot or no?
Yeah. In California, it was all legal. It was a blunt, and it was half tobacco, half pot, I guess.
I love that.
Yeah, me too. you and I we're smoking our blunts all the time.
You get lung cancer twice as fast.
Yeah. So anyway, really he's smoking good. This, and you're thinking to yourself,
yeah,
what are you doing? I mean, you are a CEO of a company. And people are saying that you're a little unhinged.
Right.
What are you doing?
Well, you don't know what he's doing. What he's doing is there's going to be a new advertising campaign for the Tesla. And that is when you charge up your car, you know, your electric charge,
mm-hmm.
you get a free pot.
Free blood. Yeah.
It's like very much in the drug culture there.
Very. Though. You're very. You're smooth. No, you're smooth. The other thing is
$150,000 for the car. So he has a little bag of pot.
The other thing that I want to bring this up is I've been watching Joe Rogan for a while. And, you know, Joe Rogan was the guy who was, you know, we eat this spider for $100. He was that guy.
Yeah.
And he started a podcast, you know, I don't know how long ago, and it has grown into an absolute force. No one in the mainstream media sees that they have been dethroned. They're just...
Oh, it's just like BillO'Reilly.com.
Well...
It's just like my thing.
With pot.
I mean, we're going crazy. And thank you for mentioning it. Oh, you didn't?
Sure.
I did. All right, okay. So Rogan, yeah, Rogan's good. I got a gift for you and Stu.
Oh, you really?
What? You, Beck.
What is that?
Okay. We started a new concierge service on BillO'Reilly.com.
Did you? Really?
Yeah.
Can I get
a little extra money?
Can I get a hookah there?
Yeah, we send you pot. No.
Okay.
That's not true. The concierge service means you directly, if you sign up for the service, and I'm giving it to you and Stu free, okay? Because I know you need this service.
I do.
You can email me directly with any questions you have, and I'll answer them.
Well, that is something, you know, it's...
You know what a lot of these concierge members are doing? They're asking me questions about their kids in school. It's fascinating.
Why do you know about their kids in school? Is there something we should know about here?
Certain teachers are doing this. How do you handle it?
Yeah.
What should the kids say? What are my rights? Should I allow it to happen?
See, we have
a lot of that.
We have something very, very similar where you can just email me at glenbeck.com, and then I don't even read it.
Yeah.
And so it just goes into a black hole.
Not really successful. But at BillO'Reilly.com, I do.
Yeah.
I do. And I answer all of them. And there are some really insane ones, too.
Mm.
Yeah, there's one that people write in and they say, we have a city council member named Hortense, and she's really mean. What should I do?
And what is your advice?
My advice is don't ever come out of the house.
Right.
That's it. Okay. If this is what you're paying, ask me, just don't go out of the house.
Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. You can sign up. When you join BillO'Reilly.com, is that what you get? You get this?
No, you're a premium member. When you join, you can upgrade a concierge membership, and you and Stu are getting it.
Oh, wow.
I'm very excited about
this.
Because you guys need a lot of advice, and I'm there for you.
It's like Christmas on a Holocaust Day. It's wholly inappropriate. Thank you. I don't even know what that means. Bill, thank you very much.
Sure. All right,
might have
guys.
Been the blunt that I had. Thank you.
You should stop doing drugs on the air. That's one
you
thing.
You think so?
We should try to...
Elon might want to think about that too.
Ask Bill O'Reilly with his concierge email if you should continue to do drugs on the air and see if that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
It might not be. We'll have to check it out with Bill.
All right.
BillO'Reilly.com.
Okay. Whatever. All right. I want to talk to you a little bit about office chairs. The chair that you're sitting in. Everybody knows what kind of car you have, right? I mean, quick, what kind of car do you have? What kind of, seat do you have in your car? Does it have anything special in it to make you feel more comfortable? What kind of maneuvers does it do? Everybody knows all of this stuff about their car, and we pay so much attention to it, but we're sitting in our chair at our office for 8 hours a day. And we get these crappy chairs from Staples. And no offense to Staples, but, you know, I'm not really looking to sit in one of your chairs for a long period of time. Unfortunately, so many of us do that because there's somebody in the office who just orders chairs. I have no idea who ordered these chairs, but they suck. And, well, they've stopped them from squeaking. That's nice. I've just ordered some new chairs. I've ordered X chair.
New chairs? That means Stu will be getting one of these chairs?
Okay. Well, I put one in the TV studio for me. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, it's not a back chair. It just has the best lumbar support of any chair I've ever been in.
Mm.
Like, it's crazy. The guy who runs this company was just in, and he said, he was so amazing. He's like, can I see you sit in the chair? And I said, oh, I mean, you want to take pictures? I mean, it's not very sexy, but, and he's like, ooh, ick. Okay, no. But he adjusted it. It has 900 different ways to adjust this chair.
Wow.
And it's just the best chair I've ever sat in. If you are looking for an office chair, you're looking to redo your office and have a bunch of chairs for everybody, this is the best chair ever. We're getting them into the studio. I already have one that is great. They are on sale, $100 off. It's the X chair. Go to xchairbeck.com. That's the letter xchairbeck.com. Or you can call 844-4-X-CHAIR. X chair comes 30-day, no questions asked, guarantee of complete satisfaction. xchairbeck.com. Use the promo code Beck, and you'll get not only the usual $100 off sale, but you'll also get a free footrest as well. 844-4-X-CHAIR or xchairbeck.com. Hello, and welcome to the program. Glad you are here. Today is the first day the tickets go on sale to the general public. Are they available now or do they start at a certain time? They're available right now. If you go to glenbeck.com/tour, it's our Addicted to Outrage tour. I am announcing, I think, an additional city Monday or Tuesday, I think. I think it's next week. I'm not really sure. Everything blurs to me. But I think I'm announcing another additional city next week. But there are plenty of cities all over the country, and we would love to see you. It is, it's going to be fun. There's going to be some laughs. There's going to be somebody joining me, and we'll tell you about that coming up in the next few weeks. But you want to grab your tickets now, and it's our Addicted to Outrage tour. You can find a city near you and come and see us. Find it at glenbeck.com/tour.
Pretty exciting. You haven't done this in a long time, so it'll be
so nervous.
A lot of fun. Plus, if you're you can get books too. Some of the packages have the signed books mm-hmm. involved in them, meet and greets and all sorts of other stuff.
Yeah.
So pretty cool.
Yeah. I like the fact that one of the meet and greets includes alcohol, which
I
being
like
an alcoholic
like
and the seeing that the show is, you know, named, you know, Addicted to
a lot of times they do this, like when you have like a big drug problem, mm-hmm. they'll give you other things that are kind of bad too, but they're a lesser addiction.
Yeah.
So this is one of the ways we're treating your addiction to alcohol.
Yeah, I will tell you
we're gonna liquor you up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. you know, if you're an alcoholic, mm-hmm. that's much better than being addicted to outrage.
Is it really?
Yeah, it is. It really is.
It is, at least at night.
Yeah.
I don't know in the morning or during the day if it's better.
Yeah, it is.
Really?
Yeah. This is somebody who's been there. At least the beginning, before your life completely spirals out of control,
mm-hmm.
you know, both. I wasted all of those good blackouts on nothing.
Yeah,
I didn't. There's nothing I wanted to forget at that time. Now.
So much.
Oh, I could
so
drink
much.
Myself into oblivion during one of the Senate hearings and I wouldn't remember it.
Mm.
It would be fantastic.
Do we have a bar here at the studios?
Kids, don't waste your alcoholic blackouts on nothing. Save them for later in life. You might need them.
Glenn Beck.
And the winner of the Tony Award for Best Political Theater Ensemble Cast for their production of Confirmation Sabotage Stooges. Cory Booker and the Senate Democrats.
Hey, you did it, Cory.
That's fantastic, isn't it? Republicans were good, but you just can't beat the combination, the knockout punch of Dick Durbin, Dianne Feinstein, Patrick Leahy, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker. I mean, they know how to put on a show, don't they? And I think the best actor, Tony, it was clearly Cory Booker because... I mean, look at this. This is Oscar-worthy performance. Watch.
This is about the closest I'll probably ever have in my life to an I Am Spartacus moment.
I am Spartacus.
With the Shakespearean flair of only a dramatic actor, Booker informed the Senate Judiciary Committee that he was willing to lay it all out on the line and ensure that confidential racial profiling emails were released from Brett Kavanaugh's days working in the George W. Bush White House. It was almost as exciting and as real, as visceral, as that moment that we've all had, where somebody finally stands up and says, "Mr. Chairman, it was Kavanaugh in the racial profiling billiard room." Yes, it was thrilling to watch. But then Senator John Cornyn read aloud some Senate rules reminding Booker that releasing confidential documents is not allowed and that by doing so, he'd be, you know, expelled from the Senate. And that's when Booker bravely stared the villain Cornyn in the eyes and said, "Bring it." And then he said, "Bring it again." And he said, like, "Bring it, bring it, bring it," five or six times. He brought it home. I mean, it was compelling. Either that or he's doing different takes for his television commercials. "Bring it." "No, I didn't like that one. Let me do it again." "Bring it." "No, not quite right. I've got to have the perfect take for my campaign commercials for president." Now, the only, and this is barely even worth mentioning, the only criticism, you know, of his performance yesterday is that, you know, it was completely phony. But that's what you expect from actors, right? Right? They're playing a role. It turns out the damaging emails that he was so desperate to risk my career to release apparently already approved to release. So not a big deal. And by the way, in those emails, you know, it's racial profiling in the billiard room. Not really. It actually showed that Kavanaugh was saying, hey, slow down, slow down. This is right after 9/11. Slow down, slow down, slow down. Yes, there are people coming here that want to kill us, but we cannot do anything that is based on race. Oh. So it's almost like Kavanaugh in the billiard room without the candlestick or the racial profiling or anything else. He was just in the billiard room. That's enough. Bring it. Booker was not being brave. He wasn't being a rebel. He wasn't willing to fall on his sword for principles. He was playing it on TV. "Hello, I'm Cory Booker. I'm not a doctor, but I do play one on TV." And then take your glasses off. Oh my gosh, that's brilliant. And when it turned out that the damaging emails weren't really even damaging Kavanaugh, that's when CNN decided to say, I was going to have him on, you know, to talk about it, because I'm really upset about it, because I think he did some really bad things. But he wouldn't come on, so I'm not going to talk about it. Can we play that Cuomo quote, please?
"All right. I was going to talk to you about Senators Kamala Harris and Cory Booker and how they seem to be showing off today, maybe as a posture for 2020. But you know what? They wouldn't come on the show to defend themselves anyway, or at least make the case to you. So forget it."
So forget it. "Of course, Donald Trump is on my program every night defending himself. If he wouldn't come on, I would not say a naughty word about him, because it would be quite unfair of us to do." Oh, I love the new ever-changing standards at CNN. Well, the sad news is, everything that I just told you, you know, the whole Tony Award, it wasn't real. He didn't win the Tony, neither did the Senate Democrats. I was just making that up and playing a role exactly like Cory Booker was yesterday.
It's Friday, September 7th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, Stu.
Mr. Beck.
Can we just talk about some, like, human stuff here for a second? Just for a second. Have you gone to, have you seen Crazy Rich Asians?
I did see Crazy Rich Asians. Yes, last weekend.
It is the most aptly titled movie I've ever seen.
Yeah. It's not, they're not, because you think, are they calling them crazy? No, they're just saying they're crazy rich.
Yeah.
There's a lot of craziness in the movie, but.
Yeah, they're crazy rich Asians. Somebody asked Tanya the other day, have you seen that movie? She said, yeah. Well, what's it about? Crazy rich Asians. Yeah. I mean, it's that describes it. Did you like it?
Yeah, it was fun.
I thought it was lots of fun.
It was fun. It was an it was.
You know who I really strangely like, and she probably hates my guts.
That's you can. Yeah, this is a very open book, but go ahead.
Yeah. Let's start in the A's. Awkwafina. You know who Awkwafina is?
No, I don't.
The actress? Yes,
I know this. I know the.
She was in Ocean's 8, and she's in this one. She was the blonde Asian. You know, the friend.
Yeah, she's very funny.
She is hysterical. I just love her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was good. It was a good movie. It was because I remember, you remember the 80s, and I know that probably for you, maybe not, lots of drugs going through the system.
I wouldn't even signify that with an answer.
But there was a time where it was okay to celebrate wealth as something that was not the end goal of your life, but that something was generally positive and something that maybe you'd want to get involved in, right?
Yeah.
And there was all those movies like Michael J. Fox would make like The Secret of My Success.
Yeah.
And it was all basically about him trying to get rich. And at the end, he kind of learns there's more to it than that.
Huh.
But it was still it glorified that a little bit. And then there was an era where rappers and mm-hmm, sort of rap mm-hmm, culture mm-hmm, embraced mm-hmm. And this is when, by the way, Donald mm-hmm. Trump was incredibly popular mm-hmm. uh-huh. with African Americans and he would that culture really, you know, made that a big deal and that was okay and it was interesting in this way in that it was this movie made it sort of okay in some ways to be wealthy
No, it didn't. No, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're. Well, I mean, I mean,
yes. On the surface, mm-hmm. yes, but it was glorifying crazy rich people.
Asians, yes.
But it was very clear, though. It's what you said. It. I said it incorrectly. I said crazy rich people.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy rich Asians. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy rich white people. That's obscene. Okay.
Yeah.
But if it's on the other side of the planet where people have been oppressed for a long time, they can be the biggest capitalists and the biggest, you know, money pigs ever. And it's not so bad.
No.
It's not so bad. They're taking it away from the white man.
I mean, most of the good characters in the movie are, of course, embarrassed.
They're embarrassed
about the wealth. And but still, like.
But they're not embarrassed by the wealth. They're embarrassed by the decadence and the meaninglessness of the wealth.
Yeah.
I thought it was a great story. I thought it was, in some ways, the Great Gatsby. Just set in, I mean, a happier Great Gatsby. I hate to say Great Gatsby because if you've ever watched it or read it, you're like, oh, dear God, no. Mm-hmm. But it has that same party atmosphere, that same over the top. Oh, my gosh, what is it like to have that kind of money? And then the grotesqueness of it. But it's a happy story.
Yeah, I think so. I liked it. I liked it too. Can I give you another one that I think is positive?
Yeah.
On the other side of this equation.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Owens, the actor from The Cosby Show. We talked about him a little bit earlier this week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He had a picture taken of him working as a bagger at Trader Joe's. And
oh, can you believe that?
This guy.
He had to take a job at a grocery store.
And by the way, his shirt is too tight.
Only.
He seems to be overweight now.
Only peasants work at grocery stores.
Right. And so that was kind of the attitude of particularly one Fox News article, but many publications sort of did this. And right away, you know, I think a lot of really good people said, wait a minute, what the heck? So the guy took a job and is actually working for a living. Good for him. We should be proud of that.
Mm-hmm.
So listen to this. This is the first person when he realized an article was going to be written about him.
Oh, I love this story.
Yeah. He texted his 19-year-old son to apologize, which is really rough. He said, he was the first person I thought of, and I texted, I'm really sorry if this embarrasses you. He texted me back something, a beautiful response that made me cry, and I knew it was going to be okay. Now, because of, you know, partially because of the attention, I guess, He is now mulling over some acting jobs that he might be able to take, which might be cool. And it's kind of nice. I think people really like look at him and say, you know, this is a good, you know, you kind of wish everybody who has this moment, and they kind of come into our living room. And the Cosby Show was in our living room, luckily, with Bill, not so literally, but it was in.
Well, he never got near the bar.
He never got near the bar, luckily. But, you know, these people, they become, in some ways, in a roundabout way, your friend, right?
Yeah.
Where you kind of care about them and you feel like, okay, someone, you know, that person accomplished something amazing. This is a legendary television show. This guy was on it. You just believe in the back of your mind that all these people are kind of living at least a halfway decent, you know, life when it comes to wealth. It's not true, right? And people,
how many times do we read about these people and we see them and they're big and fed? They look like me. And you're like, whoa, what happened to that guy? Right. And then they don't accomplish anything. They're strung out on drugs, you know, and they're just a nightmare. Here's a guy who gave it up, said, you know what? It's not, I can't make it in acting. I don't have enough. I've got to support my family. So yes, I'm going to take a normal job. This is a great story.
Yeah.
A great story.
Yeah. And the reaction, I think, this is totally across aisles. There's nothing political about it. The overarching reaction to him was really positive. He writes, I imagine the worst case scenario to brace myself and somehow managed to be worse than I expected. The pictures of me, the words that were used to describe me were so demeaning. It was humiliating acutely for a very short time. And then there was this amazing rescue from the world. I mean, imagine you're in the middle of going through this and now he's seen in such a positive light and rightfully so. I think that's a great story.
And who hasn't been in a situation like this where it may not have happened to you publicly like that, but something has happened and you know because of you, your kids are going to be embarrassed or whatever, and it's going to come back on your kids and your heart is breaking. You know, and it doesn't even have to be that. It can be, you know, I remember the worst Christmas of my life, because I made it that, was the Christmas I couldn't afford anything for the kids. I just couldn't afford anything. And I felt like such a bad dad the entire fall and Christmas. I just felt like you're the worst pathetic guy ever. You can't afford anything for your kids for Christmas. Well, no, it's not about that. It's not about that. My kids don't remember that Christmas. You know, it's not like it wasn't like, oh my gosh, yeah, Dad, we remember this dark Christmas. I do, but they don't. And so we carry this stuff around that we have to do this or have to be this. In this case, he didn't want to be. He knew that the press would take and make him look horrible. And I'm sorry for what you have to go through. And his kid to come back and say, Dad, I want you to have this job. I couldn't be more proud of you.
Yeah.
Is just, I mean, that is a Cosby Show ending.
Now, the Bill Cosby ending is not a Cosby Show ending at all.
That's
like a,
that's more of like an HBO Bad ending. Or, yeah, it's like a Ozark. After Dark.
It's not. You do not want that ending, no.
All right, let me tell you a little bit about Mercury Real Estate. You want to sell your house? You want to sell it for the most amount of money and in the quickest time possible? We have the agent for you.
Ooh.
Yeah.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
Are they in my area, though, Glenn?
Are they what?
Are they in my area? I don't want a real estate agent that's in California when I live in Texas. How will I get the one in my area?
Well, that's what the website does. It you go to realestateagentsitrust.com and it finds the ones that are in our network, you know, in your area.
Yeah, but I don't want just some agent that's paying a lot, you know, for advertising.
No, they're not paying us at all.
You're just probably picking the ones that have the most pictures on the benches. That's how a lot of people pick real estate agents.
I love that.
People sit on my face every day. Go with me for your biggest investment.
Man, I wanted that real estate agent because they looked so great, but that homeless person was passed out over the phone number. So realestateagentsitrust.com. We have them handpicked for their knowledge, their skill, their track record, their integrity. They know your area. Realestateagentsitrust.com. Go there now if you want to sell or buy your house. Realestateagentsitrust.com. Hello, my friend. Glad you're here. By the way, today is the first day that you can buy for on sale for the general public the tickets to the Addicted to Outrage tour coming to a theater near you. And I will be there and love to meet you and love to have you involved in this. It's going to be a night of learning, of possible little dramatics, a little comedy, and lots of fun. So join us. You can get your tickets today. Coming to a city near you. Do you have the cities by any chance?
Of course I do, Glenn. It's one of those things that I've memorized long ago.
And you're
one of the things here it is. San Antonio, Texas. Houston, Texas. Dallas. Richmond, Virginia. Hershey, Pennsylvania. Pittsburgh, PA in November. We've got Cleveland, Kansas City. Evansville, Indiana. Tulsa, Tampa, and Orlando, with more cities to come.
So join us. Get your tickets today. And you can find those at Ticketmaster at glenbeck.com/tour.
Yeah, I'm interested about something here. Do we have a second to get into this, Glenn? About this change the Democrats have made. It's not getting any coverage, and I think it's fascinating.
Okay,
they to appease the Bernie Sanders crew, because last time they were like, "Well, Bernie really would have won if not for the superdelegates." And you remember this whole controversy over Hillary. And so they wanted to do something to...
By the way, you know why the super delegates, why that was enacted by the Democrats?
Yeah, God, I don't remember, though.
Reagan. They saw what happened with Reagan, that all of a sudden this outsider came out of nowhere.
And somehow won.
And somehow won, and they wanted to stop that. No, we can't have any outsiders come in.
So the Bernie Sanders said, basically, hey, we're the Bernie Sanders is the Reagan of the left, right?
Yep,
like, he's the principled guy that's going to come in, and you fought him off. First of all, it's not true. Hillary Clinton beat Bernie Sanders by a lot of votes. And, you know, some people will say, well, Debbie Wasserman Schultz wanted Hillary to win and they were setting it up for her. The bottom line is voters voted the way they wanted to vote. And she won by millions of votes. It was closer than it should have been for Hillary, but it was not close.
No, here's the deal. Bernie Sanders is clearly the guy that the Democrats should run in 2020.
Right.
I mean, because there's a movement for him.
Right.
Vast movement.
So the progressive, the hardcore progressives made a push to get the rules changed and get the superdelegates out of the race. Okay. So now superdelegates can't be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
The funny part about this is with the changes, it's actually going to wind up hurting the far left.
Why?
Because the way they set it up was they got rid of superdelegates on the first ballot. And all you have to do is get over a majority of the delegates yourself. So that seems like, okay, well, man, that's easy. I mean, Bernie can do that, right? But, of course, the establishment's a little too smart for that one. So what they did is they got rid of these superdelegates, but you have to get a majority. So think about how this race is going to play out. You're going to start this race with, what, 15 candidates? And so for the first 10 primaries, probably no one, just like Donald Trump, right, back in 2016, no one's getting 50% of the vote. They're all going to get like 26 and win primaries with 26% of the vote. And it's going to be very difficult. You're going to have to beat all of the other candidates. So when it comes to the end of this election cycle, you're going to have to not only beat whoever the main candidate is, but also beat all of the other candidates and get over 50%. If you don't, on the second ballot, the superdelegates come in. So,
oh my gosh.
So unless you completely dominate, like Bernie Sanders comes in and wins every primary.
Well, that's what's going to happen if they run him.
Right.
That's exactly going to happen if they run him. So run him.
Mm-hmm. So unless he
Keith Ellison for vice president.
But if you dominate, you would have got the superdelegates anyway last time. You know, if Bernie Sanders wins 70% of the vote, he's going to win to get the superdelegates anyway. It's not going to make a difference. So what they've set up here is a way for superdelegates to come in and rescue the second place person. It's amazing.
Welcome to the program. Today, I think it's amazing that the mainstream media has just been passed, maybe even lapped, and they don't even know it. Joe Rogan was on, or Joe Rogan had Elon Musk on yesterday. You're not a nobody show if Elon Musk is showing up, you know?
No, the guy has over a million viewers of the podcast. I think daily.
Yeah, it's a monstrous show.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, twice, three times the number of CNN watchers. Mm-hmm. And so the mainstream media doesn't even, they don't even know. It used to be, look how far ahead Joe Rogan is. Now it's, look how clueless the mainstream media is. They've just, he is the king of media now. That's the show. That's the Larry King of today, Joe Rogan. And I, my apologies to Joe Rogan for comparing him to Larry King. But only meaning that that's the, you know, at one point to be interviewed with Howard Stern, that was the place you were going to get the interview that, you know, was different and open. It's Joe Rogan now, and Joe can back it up with all of the numbers. And that's why Tesla stock is taking a nosedive today, because Elon Musk gets on and smokes a blunt with him.
If I could say one thing to Elon Musk, it would be, dude, get a nap in. I mean, seriously, he's got to get a grip on this. He's tanking his company and his reputation, and I think his future endeavors.
What do you think the odds are that he's okay with that? Because he is a billionaire, wants to live the billionaire lifestyle. He's not. He said in this interview, "I'm not the CEO guy. I'm not that. I'm not a company. I'm a guy who takes ideas and I try them."
Mm-hmm.
You know. And he's kind of turned into a company, and I don't think that's who he is or what he wants, really. And so, you know, I wonder if there's a chance that he wants out.
I mean, either that, there's a better way of doing it, like, you know, selling your company, you know, selling it to someone you trust.
Right. Or getting somebody to run it. Getting someone to run it. Something else.
Yeah, exactly.
But
going to now.
I think he's had a bit of a breakdown.
I think so too. He's acting very erratically.
Uh-huh.
And you know, it's not that he, because I've always liked about Musk is he lives the billionaire life the way I would live my billionaire life if I had one, which was do whatever the hell I want, come up with a crazy idea and just do it.
You're sitting in your backyard and you're like, what if we tunnel under the freeway?
and then
he does it.
And then it starts happening. And you're why is, you know, so I like that about him. And that's, you know, he's certainly an eccentric guy. But it's like, this is a, you know, this whole thing with BuzzFeed, where he emailed a reporter some accusations about this guy in Thailand.
He can't let that go.
Yeah, he can't let that go, which, you know, I mean, he thinks...
Strange.
He seems to really think that it's true, and I don't know.
Somebody stole him.
Right. I have no idea.
He has some information from somebody that guy really did...
Whether it's right or wrong.
Whether it's right or wrong.
Yeah.
Somebody said, Elon, that guy is a child molester.
I mean...
And he took it to the bank.
Right. And the guy from BuzzFeed, I think this is really unfair. I mean, I would never, if that's the way BuzzFeed is going to deal with you as a journalist, you can't trust them at all.
I don't know how BuzzFeed, I mean, this is not a good sign for future sources for BuzzFeed, what they did to Musk. Because, I mean, if you didn't see this, Musk emailed them, they emailed Musk and asked him some questions. He responded and said, off record. And then gave some details.
Yeah, and he said...
And he called him a child rapist in that, didn't he?
Yeah, he said, you need to do your homework. Somebody needs to do their homework on this guy because he's a child rapist. So it shows he actually is not just spouting this. He's saying, can someone do their journalistic job and look into this?
Mm-hmm.
But he said, off the record,
right. Now
you should look into this.
The traditional understanding between reporter and source is... The reporter would say, or the source would say, can I go off the record on this? And the reporter would say yes. And so that's the technicality that they're using here to print the email, even though he said it was off the record. Now, in reality, in everyday life, and we've dealt with a million PR firms and we've done a lot of this stuff, it's very standard practice via email to do this, to say off the record and then put it in there. Because think of how cumbersome the alternative is via email. I email Glenn and I say, hey, Glenn, can I go off the record with my next email? Then Glenn responds, yes, you can go off the record with this next email. Then I write the next email and I send it. And you ask a follow-up question. Then I have to write again. Glenn, can I go off the record again on this next email? And you get to such a ridiculous, cumbersome process that it's pretty standard practice that a reporter would not violate it if you asked to be off record. They cannot take the information and they can leave the information out of the article, but they're not going to rip you and just print your email after you ask that.
It's
a courtesy that reporters should be giving to sources if they want any of them in the future.
If I could print the things that I have from journalists who will write to me over the last 4 years, who have written to me with all caps at the beginning, this cannot be used on the air. This is off the record.
Mm-hmm. Okay? You could say, I didn't agree to that.
I didn't agree to that.
And you said
but I never have.
No. Right.
I mean,
because it wouldn't be cool.
You're just using common decency.
Yep. And if you had an important story that you, you know, you, BuzzFeed was one of the, you know, reporters you were, you know, someone from BuzzFeed was one of the ones you'd be considering giving it to. Why would you go there if the risk is they can find some technicality and just print whatever you're giving them? They could just, you know, they can just expose you because they might say, well, you didn't go around this process exactly right. Well, look, Musk is stupid for sending the email like that. I mean, he should not be talking to reporters about this at all. If you want to hire someone for a couple $100,000 a year, give them all your theories and have them pitch them. But I mean, there's no reason for him to be directly emailing reporters with pedophilia theories. That's not a good idea for a CEO.
That's why I think he's had a little bit of a breakdown. That between that and the tweets about taking his company public, which tanks stock, to the tweets about how I'm not sleeping, I'm on Ambien, and all the stuff.
Yeah,
but the shareholders have to be.
Well, they are
a little edgy.
They're talking
right
about
now.
Replacing him now.
Well, I think he has to be.
Have you heard the conspiracy theory about what's going on? Where he wanted to take the company private, and so he's acting erratically publicly, knowing this is going to hurt
the
stock price. Right, right.
He'll
if it's true, it's obviously he would go to jail for it. By the way, we should also mention one of his the head of his accounting department left as well. And he says it's nothing to do with the books. He's just, I found it to be overwhelming and too much for me to handle. And he left. So that is also probably part of the reason the stock price has gone down today. But still, there's we've been through a few weeks of this now where Musk every other day is in the news for something. It feels like the beginning of that, like, Charlie Sheen period.
I know. And like, I hate that because I love his brain. I love the way it works. I love his, you know, hey, let's dig a big hole under Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. I love that.
How about a big bank tube that goes around the country and can go really fast?
Right? I mean, that's so unique and so great. He is the Edison or Tesla of our time. And, you know, Tesla, how many times was Tesla put into an institution for exhaustion?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Tesla was
a ton.
He married a pigeon.
Yeah. 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 When
are you judging?
No. Wow. No, pigeons are people, too.
Right.
But, you know, he was put into an institution, and it wasn't for he was crazy. It was because of exhaustion. They used to call this exhaustion.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a breakdown has such a bad ring to it. But you can only run so fast for so long before your body just says, I can't do it.
Yeah, and he's had all those problems at the Tesla factory where they're like 2 years or something behind schedule on the production of the $35,000 model, which still has not been produced. And they've got a waiting line of 400,000 people who've each put down $1,000 waiting for this car. And so they couldn't get up to 5,000 vehicles a week, and that's where they have to be. And so he's lived at the factory for quite a while now and doesn't sleep and doesn't go anywhere. That's bound to take a toll on you. And it looks like it has. And it's too bad because it's, you know, like you said, guy's a genius. He's really fun to watch. And I love that car. How many? Yeah, we all drove.
That's awesome.
It's a great
was
car.
Was it the P90?
I saw, I think I saw, look up Model 3 versus Corvette V12. This is the most amazing thing I've ever seen.
Does it blow it away?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Like not even a contest.
And this is the...
Like, what happened to the Corvette?
This is the one that's supposed to be $35,000.
Yeah.
In the base price. But
do you see it?
They haven't gotten there yet.
And this is probably not the base model, I would assume.
Yeah. So this is the top of the line Corvette. The V12, they call it something else. Top of the line. They are both... It's a camera at the driver's window of the Tesla to watch how close the Corvette is. Okay. Light goes green. They're on a track. They both take off. You don't even see the front of the Corvette move. Okay. Before it's out of frame, it's out of frame the whole time. You see the black and white checker of the finish line. The Tesla slows down, turns. And as it's turning, that camera was angled to the side, so as it's turning, you see the Corvette then cross the finish line. Jeez. It's unbelievable.
Is it a quarter mile? How far?
Probably how quarter far mile. Maybe mile or quarter mile.
Yeah, and the cars are
amazing.
The cars are amazing. You know,
it's amazing.
Mean, but it's a different. It's a different deal to run a company that can sell $200,000 cars to really rich environmentalists.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different model than selling 35,000 cars. I mean, that's really hard.
Then you're like Ford. You're trying to compete with Ford.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, Lamborghini stays in business because they make, you know, $300,000 cars for really rich people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Tesla kind of, and not to mention a bunch of cash from the government, by the way, mm-hmm. a bunch of taxpayer dollars thrown in there as well to make sure that they
can
make
these. Yeah, but only about $7,000 per car.
So, yeah. So $7,500 per car, it's not a big deal.
That's not a big deal.
How many Teslas have you bought?
Okay.
I mean, you don't
all
own
together.
Any. You don't own any.
Oh, yeah,
but how many have your tax dollars bought?
Quite a few.
Quite a few.
Quite a few.
Quite a few of those Teslas that are driving around. I own about $7,000 of that.
And can we address something for the TV audience here
yeah.
at the Blaze? You can, of course, watch the radio show every mm-hmm. day on the Blaze TV.
Mm-hmm.
Behind Pat is a happy birthday balloon.
Mm-hmm.
And
I don't think this is necessary.
This
to bring
is not
up.
Pat's birthday,
no,
as people might be noticing.
I don't think this
it is
necessary.
Not my birthday.
No, it is Marissa's birthday, our, mm-hmm. our producer.
Oh, Marissa usually sits there, which is directly in front of me.
Mm-hmm. What are you, 13 now, Marissa?
Yeah.
12. Oh, wow. Congratulations.
13, yeah. So
this mm-hmm. this balloon that says happy birthday has been on the chair of Marissa the entire show, and Glenn has been looking at Marissa the entire
talking
show.
Talking to her mm-hmm. the whole time.
And about 15 minutes ago, he stops and says, is it your birthday today? Now, again, we were in here prepping.
Man, you got to get up early to put one over on you.
Yeah. Have you seen Sherlock?
I have.
The opposite of that.
And I'm sort of even going further because it was really Glenn's daughter, Mary, who was in here talking to Glenn, who noticed
walked in.
And then
who just walked in.
Who just walked in and said, oh, Marissa, is it your birthday? And that's when Glenn said, Marissa, is it your birthday?
So astute.
It really is impressive, isn't it?
Yeah. No, you want me on crime scenes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You want me on crime scenes because nothing gets past me.
May I just say, more on trivia.
Ooh.
Today.
Oh.
Hour number two of
Holy
Packer
Holy cow.
More on trivia. Green Bay Packers.
Wow.
Chicago Bears, the matchup.
Hmm. Flap Jackson may have to stop by this season.
Okay. I'd love to see it.
Might have to stop by.
Love to see
it. Stunningly, the game is Pat's favorite team's debut.
Huh.
By the way,
pure coincidence.
My favorite team debuted last night as well with a win. An unimpressive, awful,
very
ugly, messy win, but we'll take it. Go Eagles.
Whatever.
TheBlaze.com TV, /TV, by the way, is the place you can see Pat Gray on More on Trivia today. And also, we've got the news and why it matters coming up tonight, and lots of great stuff, so check it out.
You're busy. You're an executive. You might be sleeping on your factory floor and smoking blunts on television for some unknown reasons. Not helpful. Maybe you need to hire somebody. Now, the problem with hiring somebody is you can be overwhelmed with tons of resumes that are just wrong, and you don't have time to go through them all because, again, you're busy smoking blunts. ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. They'll help you. They don't wait for the candidates to find you. ZipRecruiter goes out and finds them for you. It's powerful matching technology that scans thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right skills and education and experience for the job, and then actively invites them to apply. So it's not just answering an ad. They add also on top of that kind of a headhunter service. And the way they're packaged is that you don't have to sort through the wrong resumes anymore. The right candidate is waiting for you, and ZipRecruiter is going to highlight that resume so it comes right to the top when you see it. So you're looking at the most relevant stuff. Try it now for free. This is why it's rated the number one job site for employers in the U.S., ZipRecruiter.com. Try it for free. ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. If you use the /Beck, it'll be free. ZipRecruiter.com, the smartest way to hire. I want to encourage you to sign up for our podcast if you haven't already at iTunes. You're going to be getting an extra podcast this weekend, and I am releasing this one. I kind of stumbled into something that I was not prepared to talk about. I told you over the summer that there would come a time I had something to share with you that was really important.
But it just felt right at the time. And so it's going to be released this weekend. And then on Monday, we will we'll talk about it in depth, because it's something that you need to know about. And it's important. It is not something I want to talk about. I feel compelled to talk about it. And it is the only thing I can remember, oh gosh, in at least a decade, maybe two, that I have been nervous to talk about on the air. It's important, and you will hear it. It's, I don't know, a third of the way into this podcast. It just kind of happens. So that'll be sent out this weekend. Get it, and then we'll meet back here Monday to discuss something very, very personal and yet, I think, very universal. Podcast. Sign up for it now. You can find it at iTunes or whatever, but sign up and it will be delivered to your email box sometime this weekend. God bless.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.